Even those of us who love being on the road again are staying put these days. Not so much because home is where we want to be, but because we can't afford to leave. Luckily, there's a lot of good travel writing out there. Essays and stories that can take you there without the bother of having to pack a suitcase or make a reservation. Raphael Kadushin is one of Condé Nast's senior travel writers and the editor of a new anthology called Big Trips, More Good Gay Travel Writing. He told Steve Paulson that travel writing was invented for the armchair traveler.
You know, it dates back to a time when most people really couldn't travel, when they couldn't get on a plane. Their sense of the world and even their sense of their place in the world came through, you know, reading other people's travel adventures.
So what's the mark of really good travel writing?
Well, I think like all good writing, it starts with the specific. I want to get the real, almost visceral sense of a place, the flavor, the sensual, so the smells, the sounds, the sights, really what, if you were in that place, what you would be experiencing that really is unique to the place. And that to me, you know, has to tap all the senses in a way. But then I think like all good writing, you start with the very specific, and then I think you have to end up almost like on the other side in the universal. The best travel writing is also in the end exploring really why we travel to begin with. You know, what is this impulse to leave home? Why put ourselves in danger? Why take the risk of getting out of the armchair, you know, and flinging ourselves in the world? And really also how that defines our sense of home.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because in your anthology, Big Trips, you have divided it up into two sections, going out and coming home. And the going out part is obvious. You know, you go out to exotic places and you see new things. The coming home part is not as obvious.
I think it's the two parts that actually all travel writing sort of tends to fall into. And one is just that euphoria, and it's more the youthful kind of travel writing, although you don't necessarily have to be young to write it, but it's that just euphoria of throwing yourself out in the world and discovering the wider world, of leaving home, essentially. But then there's also the tired traveler and the one who's, you know, gotten past that first stage of euphoria, who's flung himself or herself out in the world maybe too many times. And for a lot of those writers, it's looking for the place that feels like the place where they can finally settle, where they can finally stop traveling.
Are you suggesting that sometimes you have to go away to appreciate home?
I think a lot of travel writers, it's not about, you know, finding a new place to call home. It's getting some perspective on the place they call home and learning why they appreciate that place so much. Mm-hmm. I know for me as a traveler and a travel writer, more and more the older I get, honestly, the best part of a trip is coming home. But you don't have a sense of your home. You don't get that sort of aerial view of your home, your perspective of your home, unless you leave it.
Let me ask you a bit about your own work as a travel writer, because you do a lot of writing for various magazines. What do you look for when you're visiting a new place? I mean, you know that you're going to be writing a piece about, I don't know, some city in Europe. You're going to be there for a week, maybe 2 weeks. How do you immerse yourself into that place that would be different than the way a tourist would normally approach it?
You have a kind of vague angle, but of course you don't know till you get there really if that angle's even going to work or if you're going to find another angle. So there's that moment of panic, actually, and it's a hard thing for a travel writer, and it's the hardest part of travel writing, is the first 2 or 3 days of a trip where you don't really see the story, where you're looking for something. You're looking, it's like meeting someone for the first time. You're looking for something that really is remarkable about the place or really unique about the place. And that's hard to find, and it's getting harder to find as places become more and more alike and a little more generic.
Can you give me an example of that, of a place you've gone where at a certain moment you realize, oh, okay, I have it now. I know how to write about this place. I've noticed something that I hadn't noticed before.
Well, I guess the most recent one that comes to mind is I write a lot about Holland because we lived there for a little while when I was a kid. And I was riding the blooming route, which is the route of flowers, of tulips in the spring that run between Amsterdam and The Hague. So it's about 20 miles of just endless tulip fields and flower bulbs. But what I didn't realize, because I don't spend a lot of time on that route, is that that whole route is framed by these little cities like Leiden and The Hague itself, smaller cities, and Delft, which have some of the most incredible and the best of the Dutch master paintings, a lot of Vermeer's, in these beautiful little unknown museums.
Hmm. Oh, really? Know, so yeah. They're not all in the great museums in Amsterdam?
No, not at all. In fact, some of the best are in these little, really, arts towns that frame the Blooming Route. And this is where it gets to sort of, in some ways, the Dutch soul, because the Dutch were really the first modernists in the sense that those tulip fields, those gardens, and those paintings are celebrating beauty and sensual beauty, earthly beauty, for its own sake. And that's very different from the sensibility you get in France or England at the same time, where you've always got some saint or Madonna intruding on the painting. You know, if it's a painting of a garden, there's going to be the Annunciation in the background.
So Holland doesn't have that whole religious overlay that some of the other countries
have. I mean, it was religious, but there was also this real sense of appreciation for secular beauty for its own sake. And so riding that route, seeing those paintings, seeing that love of material, of secular, of earthly beauty for its own sake, all that really kind of gelled for me.
Now, your book, Big Trips, is your second anthology of gay travel writing. What does gathering together gay voices add to the classic travel narrative?
I think travel writing is a quintessentially gay genre. And if you look even at the history of travel writing, so many of our best travel writers, even if they were closeted, people like Bruce Chatwin and Jan Morris and Christopher Isherwood, again, were gay. And I think that's not an accident. Gay people are always a foreigner, and even in their own land, even in their own home. Still, and that's true even today, even, you know, as things evolve. And I think gay kids grow up really learning to be almost natural ethnographers in the sense that they really have to read their own culture very closely to be safe, to really protect themselves. So they become very savvy, very smart at reading a culture the way a traveler or an anthropologist would. So that really, you know, I think they develop almost a second sense, this real talent, which the travel writer and the good traveler needs. You know, that sense of almost detachment, of objectivity, of really being sensitive to what defines a culture and how to read a culture and what is unique about a culture.
Rafael Kadushin is a writer for Condé Nast magazines and editor of Big Trips, More Good Gay Travel Writing. He talked with Steve Paulson.